Special note to listeners, this episode contains adult content and language. It's 1993 at Bacardi's global headquarters in Hamilton, Bermuda. CEO Manuel Jorge Cutillas lights a cigar and gazes at a burbling pool of water with Bacardi's trademark black bat painted on the bottom. The logo dates to 1862, when Cutillas' great-grandfather and the company's founder, Facundo Bacardi, began using the bat as the guiding symbol for his new rum. The barrel-chested Cutillas is 61 years old. He fled Cuba in 1960 aboard a rickety boat that nearly sank before reaching its destination. He's lost in his memories when he hears his top salesman, Juan Prado, also a Cuban exile, strolling toward him, firing up his own cigar.
What are you smoking, MJC? A Cubano?
Those on good terms with Cutillo call him MJC.
Come on, you know I don't smoke Cubanos. There's no consistency. That's what you get with communism. Yeah, communism. But we have a more pressing problem we need to talk about. Pernod Ricard.
Just 1 month ago, Pernod Ricard struck a deal with the Cuban government to equally split ownership for the coveted Havana Club rum. The once premium brand has had a hard time reaching drinkers outside the old Soviet bloc under Castro's regime. But the French company has brought in its muscle to market the rum globally.
Okay, out with it, Juan. They've started making Havana Club in the old Bacardi distillery in Santiago de Cuba.
Cutillas frowns and exhales a large plume of smoke.
I want to make sure I'm understanding this correctly. You're telling me that they're making Havana Club at our distillery on Matadero, where you and I used to make Bacardi rum? The distillery my great-great-grandfather built? Yeah, I'm afraid so. Son of a... It's one thing for the French to get in bed with Castro, but to use our stolen assets to compete against us? That's too far.
Cutillas chomps hard on his cigar and storms off. Smoke trails behind him. He grabs a phone inside a nearby conference room and calls Robert Maxwell, the head of a U.S. Association of Spirits Importers.
Robert, Manuel Cutillas at Bacardi here.
Hey, MJC, what can I do for you?
You can help me spread a message. Pernod Ricard and Cuba are making Havana Club in Bacardi's distillery in Santiago.
What?
I did not survive escaping Cuba just to see Castro and some French company use my family's property against Bacardi. Anyone who profits from Havana Club by using Bacardi's confiscated assets is going to get sued into the ground.
I'm on your side, MJC, but you know, there's an embargo here. No one in the U.S., at least, can buy Havana Club no matter where it's made.
That's true, but the embargo won't last forever. So you tell everyone you know, when that day comes, we'll sue to keep Pernod Ricard from selling Havana Club in the United States.
For Cutillas and Bacardi, the fight is personal, and they are prepared to do whatever it takes to win. As the battle escalates, it will reach the highest levels in Washington and will, quite literally, draw heavy firepower. Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.
From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. In the last episode of our series Bacardi versus Pernod Ricard, Bacardi became America's favorite rum thanks to U.S. Prohibition. Meanwhile, two rival French distillers, Pernod and Ricard, joined forces to create a spirits juggernaut bent on global domination. Now, the two companies are ready to battle over the crown jewel, the U.S. rights to Havana Club. This is Episode 3. Bat out of hell. It's the winter of 1993, Paris. Patrick Ricard, the CEO of French spirits giant Pernod Ricard, sits down for dinner in a bistro with a team of his executives.
Waiter, a Ricard, please. Right away.
Moments later, the waiter places several glasses of green liquid in front of the men at the table. He also plops down a jug of water. It's emblazoned with a logo for Ricard Pastis, a brand Patrick's father created 61 years ago. Patrick raises his glass to toast.
Let's drink to my father and to warmer days in the south of France. We'll have our pastis his way. 5 parts water to 1 part Ricard.
The executive seated next to Patrick leans in to ask a question.
Patrick, I've always wondered, what would you have done if you hadn't joined your father's company? That wasn't an option. Papa would have seen it as a betrayal if I hadn't joined.
Patrick has built his father's small French liquor brand into an international giant. In 1988, he led the acquisition of Irish Distillers, the company that makes Jameson and Bushmills. But his real coup was acquiring half of Cuba's Havana Club. Patrick Ricard looks up at his team, wordlessly calling attention to himself.
Okay, everyone, let's talk business. Now, there's something missing in our partnership with Cuba for Havana Club. The Arechabala family created the brand, and they should get something from us.
The Arechabalas have already written to Pernod Ricard to object to the deal the company struck with Cuba. One executive shakes his head.
Patrick, I don't know if we should do that. The Arechabalas gave up their brand decades ago. Offering them something might make them think they're entitled to more. And what if they become litigious?
Patrick Ricard sips his pastis slowly.
A payout might head off a lawsuit. And my father taught me to do the right thing by people. The Arechabalas hate Castro for taking Havana Club. I don't want them harboring the same animosity toward Pernod Ricard.
Days later, at a tapas bar in Madrid, a Pernod Ricard lawyer is meeting with several members of the Arechabala family, which fled to Spain in 1960 when the Castro regime nationalized their rum business. The lawyer makes an offer to the patriarch of the family, José María Arechabala Rodrigo, who glares at the lawyer.
This is a joke. You're offering us peanuts for our rum.
$100,000 is not peanuts, sir. It's a fair offer for a brand you abandoned 30 years ago.
No. Havana Club is still ours. You can't make real Havana Club without us. We have the family secret recipe. You don't have that, and neither does Castro.
If this secret formula was so special, sir, why didn't you keep making it? Why didn't you pay to renew the trademarks for Havana Club? You let the U.S. trademark lapse 20 years ago, and you never tried to regain it.
We let the trademarks lapse because we were rebuilding our lives. We had no money to make rum.
Now, the attorney is disgusted.
Oh, come on. You could have renewed the U.S. trademark fee for a lousy $25. All you had to do was file the papers. You didn't even have to make any rum. The Cuban government got the rights to the trademark in 1976 because you let it go.
The attorney takes a deep breath, calming himself.
Look, Pernod Ricard doesn't have to offer you any money because our deal with Cuba is legal. Do you understand? The trademarks we own are legal. You have no claim on the brand. So, please, understand, we're offering you money in good faith. Please, accept.
Absolutely not. Your offer is ridiculously low. We can do better.
When the meeting abruptly ends, the Arechabalas haven't told the attorney something important. They've already spoken to another suitor. This new player isn't just interested in the rights to the Havana Club name. They plan to reproduce the family's secret formula. And that suitor is Havana Club's old rival, Bacardi. It's February 1994, at a tapas bar in Madrid. Bacardi's CEO, Manuel Jorge Cutillas, digs into a plate of prawns and garlic sauce. He's seated with members of the Arechavala family. Bottles of Cuban-made Havana Club line a shelf behind the bar, but the glass in front of Cutillas contains Bacardi rum and a Coca-Cola with a wedge of lime.
I'd like to propose a toast, amigos. To a Cuba free of Castro. Por Cuba libre. Cuba libre. Now, let's talk about Havana Club. I hear Pernod Ricard made you a generous offer for your brand.
Jose Maria Arechavala Rodrigo snickers, recalling the insulting offer. Cutillas dabs his mouth with a napkin and looks up.
You did the right thing, Jose. You shouldn't accept what the Castro regime did to your family. We Bacardis will never accept it either. Cuba stole our property and they should pay a price. I know your nephew Ramon wrote a letter saying just that to Patrick Ricard.
Ramon Arechavala sits across the table from Cutillas. He's 59 and has a full head of gray hair, dark black eyebrows, and a cockeyed smile. Cutillas and Ramon are only 3 years apart. Both were forced to flee the island or face imprisonment. Ramon nods at Cutillas' remarks.
You know, I've wanted to make Havana Club again for years. I just never had the money. But Castro made a serious mistake. He's managed to turn rival companies into allies. And together, our two families can bring Havana Club back to life. So now here we are. And I have one question for you, MJC. How are you going to do it?
Cutillas stabs a shrimp with his fork and points it at Ramon.
Do you still know the family formula?
I'll never forget it. I know the yeast we used, the fermentation process, the different distillates. I know what we look for in the heads and the tails of the distillates, the types of barrels we used in aging, and exactly how we blended to achieve our family's flavor profile.
I know a little something about that kind of process, too. And I also know about secrets. Even today, only a few people at Bacardi know our exact formula for making our rum.
I'm sure you won't tell me yours, but I will tell you mine. I just want the right price and a guarantee. I want you to actually make it. I want you to bring our Havana Club back.
I promise you we'll make it. How's $1.25 million and a share in the profit sound?
It sounds like a deal.
Ramon stands and stretches out his hand. Both men shake on it.
There are no lawyers here, so we'll have to call this a gentleman's agreement for now. The contracts will take time to draw up, but we'll be ready to distill.
Cutillas excuses himself and heads out to the narrow street in front of the tapas bar. He picks up a payphone. He dials the head of Bacardi's distillery in Nassau.
Yeah, boss, what can I do for you?
I just met with the Arechavala family. They're going to sell us the Havana Club brand and recipe like we'd hoped. Get me a production line freed up. I want us making their Havana Club pronto.
But there's a big problem. There's already a Havana Club on the global market. It's sold in Madrid and in Canada and all over Eastern Europe. And with Pernod Ricard's marketing prowess, it's becoming more popular by the day. Pernod Ricard's top executives believe the brand belongs to them and to Cuba. So they figure they have the upper hand. That seems logical. But they underestimate Bacardi's will and cunning. You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind. It's a steamy Miami afternoon in April 1995. Juan Prado places a call. He's a former Bacardi sales director who's been tasked with helping to direct the company's Cuba policy. He calls Bacardi CEO Manuel Jorge Cutillas in the Bahamas with a proposition. There's a political fundraiser coming up in Miami for Jesse Helms. The North Carolina senator is co-sponsoring the Helms-Burton Act. The fundraiser is $500 a plate, and Prado is not sure how many to buy. For months, Bacardi has been stuffing a lot of money into political coffers, hoping to influence U.S. policy toward Cuba. And the politicians have been receptive. Bacardi's lawyers are even helping Helms' office draft the language of the Helms-Burton bill. A key provision will let Cuban Americans sue anyone using property in Cuba that had been seized from them. And that includes a lot of people named Bacardi.
There must be something like 500 Bacardis who are now Americans. That's a lot of potential claims.
Yeah, and Ramon Anichewala is an American too. If he sues for the Havana Club brand, the lawyers tell me he could scuttle the whole deal between Pernod Ricard and Cuba.
Then make sure that fundraiser is sold out.
Prado executes his orders. A few weeks later, Senator Helms is introduced at the fundraiser by the president of Bacardi's USA division. The event raises $75,000 for Helms. 2 months after the fundraiser, the Helms-Burton bill passes a House committee. It's formerly known as the Cuban Liberty and Democratic Solidarity Act, but many in Washington call it the Bacardi Bill. As soon as the new legislation passes, Juan Prado is at his desk in the modernist office tower Bacardi has constructed in Miami. He's plotting his next move when his secretary calls. A reporter is on the line.
Mr. Prado, everyone is saying that Bacardi is single-handedly pushing this bill forward. What do you say?
That's absurd. Bacardi doesn't have the wherewithal to be that influential. Compared to the Exxons and IBMs of the world, we're peanuts.
Unfortunately for Bacardi, peanuts aren't enough to grease the wheels of American democracy. As the weeks go on, Helms-Burton stalls in the Senate because Democrats don't like that the legislation will antagonize U.S. allies with interests in Cuba. Neither does President Bill Clinton. If the Bacardi bill is going to become law, something dramatic needs to happen. And it will, in the clear blue skies between Florida and Cuba. It's February 1996. Three twin-engine Cessna Skymasters are flying in formation, headed south toward Cuba. The wings are mounted high, giving the pilot broad vision below, allowing him to skim the craft just a few thousand feet over the rippling Caribbean Sea. The planes close in on the 24th parallel of latitude, just 40 miles north of Havana. Cuba has been conducting military operations in the area and has warned it couldn't guarantee the safety of aircraft flying there without a flight plan. Air traffic controllers in Cuba contact the approaching pilots.
Pilots, be informed that you'll be in danger if you fly over the 24th parallel.
Roger that, Havana Center. We know we're in danger each time we cross south of the 24th, but we're willing to do it. It's our right as free Cubans.
The Cessna pilots are part of a group called Brothers to the Rescue. They help guide Cuban refugees fleeing to the U.S. in makeshift boats. The group has been flying these rescue missions routinely for the past 5 years. But today, nothing is routine. As the brothers search for refugees, two Russian-made MiG fighter jets scramble into the air from a base near Havana. Within minutes, they're circling above the slower, smaller, unarmed Cessnas. The fighter pilots report back to military commanders.
The objective is in sight. It's a Cessna 337. We're locked on. Military control, give us the authorization. Come on! Give us the authorization!
Authorized to destroy.
First shot away.
The MiG fires a missile toward one of the three Cessnas. It finds its target.
We hit him! Jesus! We blew his balls off! We blew his balls off!
Minutes later, the same fighter plane has another Cessna in sight and fires a second missile. It also hits.
The other one is destroyed. Homeland or death, you bastards!
All four people above the other two planes are killed. But the Cuban fighters lose sight of the third Cessna, which speeds safely back to Florida. In the United States, the attacks immediately spark outrage. Within weeks, there are calls to punish the Castro regime, and the resulting fury stokes support for the Bacardi bill. In March, President Bill Clinton signs into law the Helms-Burton Act, the one he once opposed. But there's a catch. To cool the heat of the moment, Clinton puts the provision giving Cuban-American exiles the right to sue on ice for 6 months. That takes the teeth out of the Bacardi bill, at least temporarily. But Bacardi will soon find other ways to bite back against Cuba. It's November 1996. In his office in Paris, Pernod Ricard CEO Patrick Ricard unbuttons his double-breasted gray suit, revealing both his wide waistline and an expensive silk tie. He offers his guest a seat. He's Pernod Ricard's top attorney, Pierre-Marie Chateauneuf. The men fold themselves into a pair of leather club chairs and get down to business.
Are we done with this Bacardi bill, Pierre? I think as long as Clinton is in office, we are. But Bacardi's bought a lot of friends in Washington lately, so that could change. But we've got other ways to fight. Bacardi has shipped 900 cases of their so-called Havana Club rum to the United States.
But we share the U.S. trademark for Havana Club with Cuba.
Oui, monsieur. We got a new license for that trademark from the U.S. government just last year.
The brand is ours. Still, Ricard senses a trap.
916 cases is nothing. Bacardi probably spills more rum than that in a month.
They're baiting us into this. I agree, sir. But whatever they're up to, we're in the right, and we're going to win.
What Pernod Ricard doesn't know is that at this very moment, Bacardi is working on something new in Washington. They're plotting a powerful political sucker punch, and Pernod Ricard will never see it coming.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
From Wondery, this is Episode 3 of Bacardi versus Pernod Ricard for Business Wars. A quick note about recreations you've been hearing. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said. Those scenes are dramatizations, but they're based on historical research. We use many sources when researching our stories, but we especially recommend Tom Jelton's Bacardi and the Long Fight for Cuba and Peter Foster's Family Spirits, the Bacardi Saga. I'm your host, David Brown. Joseph Guinto wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Edited and produced by Emily Frost. Voice acting by Chris Garcia. Sound design by Kyle Randall. Our associate producer is Kate Young. Our producer is Dave Schilling. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer-Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shay Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shay Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.